people say that the program of Parliament has changed again. So we were hoping on Thursday to do certain things, and we had shortened our program. Now Parliament is sitting on Thursday afternoon, and this focus is Thursday morning. So I've cancelled all the activities for Thursday. So that means that our water input we wanted around the NWRS and the new policy proposals, we're not going to take that input, so we'll have to make some other time. And then, because we've now a shortened program, we moved the state of reports to Wednesday afternoon, but now with all these hearings and so on and legislation, I've decided to cancel those hearings also, so that we spend the whole Tuesday and Wednesday just on legislation. So we'll do public hearings, probably all day today. There's three bills we're dealing with, three sets of hearings. And then tomorrow we've also got another three submissions we have to finish. When we finish the submissions, we'll of course continue with the ICM bill. So if the people, I see some of the people from the ICM are here, we're probably not going to lead you today, definitely not this morning. So if you want to go and do some other work, please feel free to do so, so that at least you earn your salary and so on for this thing. Now, if you're for something else, then you shouldn't go, actually. That would be a very bad idea. Alright, so that's the change in program. So we'll do the three sets of hearings tomorrow, three, and then we'll go on with ICM. I suppose ICM will keep us busy for most of tomorrow. I'm not sure maybe whether we also need... did you all finish with the SOAR's amendments? Or maybe you should also be ready tomorrow. If you've conceded everything we said, then we'll actually take you first and let you go very quickly. If you've not conceded, even if you've not conceded one little thing, then I suggest you stay out of my way tomorrow. You considered everything. Okay, you'll be first tomorrow after the hearing. When you make concessions to this committee treats you very well. If you don't, then all hell is to play. Okay, so I think that's our program. Then I just wanted to say to the one DG here, and maybe so that we can, I'm thinking that, you know, we said next term when we come back, we were going to do 2 days of the BRR, BRRR. But I'm thinking maybe what we must do is first 2 days of legislation, so that whatever work you've done in the recess, we can first start processing that. Else we're only going to be able to process it the next week, and that's going to be too late. So I'm thinking that when we come back, the Tuesday, the Wednesday, we'll process legislation. And then I think the Thursday, we'll listen to Dua, and then take you the next Tuesday. And of course, as I said, you guys must also make sure our reports are ready, flowing from the hearings, okay? So, and that's why I'm putting you the next week, because I know this department is very diligent and they'll be able to get it done for us in a day or so. So, those are all our program changes. I can just tell you that I'm under huge pressure from the powers that be, Mrs. Kosana and I, to process these bills, which we in any case committed ourselves. But what that means is that it's leaving us little space, because I also wanted to do public hearings around this new suggested policy changes in Dua. I mean, the state of stuff is important for us to know, but it's not as vital as that one. But we'll try and see what we can fit in next term, and if not, we'll definitely fit it all in the beginning of next year, a whole lot of stuff. Because we're still coming back next year. I just don't know how long the program will be. But I imagine we will probably be working till March at least. I imagine elections will be in May sometime. And usually by March, after we've done the budget, we break and go and run around like a lot of mad things, asking you to vote for us. So that's how we're trying to fit it in. Okay. Any of the members, any issues around the program? Mr. Susan. Something else. Okay, no, that's fine. All right, so all day today, 9 to 5. Let's see how far we get. All right, what have we got first? We've got Nemla. Now, Nemla, I invited all of you, people that made submissions, I invited you to come listen to the briefing last Thursday, which took the whole day around us. I'm just hoping that you didn't miss that, because then we're going to have a lot of repetition about things that you won't know about. Do we have extra copies of those submissions? Are they there? All right, so if anyone talks nonsense, we'll give them a set of that to go and read it before they come and talk again, because they missed the first briefing. Okay. But let me just tell you in a nutshell, so that you're aware, those of you, I don't know who it is, are coming to make submissions to on Nemla, is that we're processing this. Three departments are all involved in this book. So we try to process everything together. We're dealing with it very uniquely. We're not just dealing with the legislation. We're dealing with the regulations at the same time. So that when we finish with these hearings, we'll have the whole legal framework in front of us so that all of us can see what it is. Okay? So that is what the briefings were about from the department. We've already made some further suggested proposals and changes how to even streamline what they've got now. So we're hoping by the end of this term to pass this jointly with minerals and with water and with environment. So you'll have in the end three pieces of legislation and three sets of regulations. Now, what is important of this is the end result. And those of you making submissions, please listen, because this is what the end result, you don't have to agree with it, but so that you understand what the end result is. The end result will be the following. Henceforth, all environmental issues in mining will be dealt with in terms of environmental laws. So no other law will apply. So environmental laws will apply to all mining issues. And the final say on environmental matters will be the Minister of Environment, will be the appeal authority. So the laws of environment apply, and the appeal authority is the minister. Also, there's one further other change, and that is that the whole issue of sensitive environmental areas, we are now making sure that that will be excluded from the possibility of mining. Okay? That's a very important issue to remember. What it is that has changed, and I read a lot of stuff in the newspapers, and it's very clear to me people don't understand. The only issue that is at hand here is that when it comes to the competent authority to make decisions on mining matters in terms of the mining law, that will be the Minister of Mineral Affairs. So you have now a cooperative relationship where the one set of laws apply. The Minister of Minerals is the competent authority to try and make sure that they harmonize the decisions on mining, but then also apply our laws to that. And then the appeal authority at the end is the Minister of Energy. But what is important, and why this committee has been looking at dealing with this compromise in this manner, is that when you look at the amendments to the regulations particularly, the processes are now totally and utterly integrated, the regulated process. So literally it says, you must do this first, then before you go, before mining does anything, let them listen to this. So this situation we have now, where people are mining without a water license, where they are mining without an EIA taking place, that will not be able to take place again. At the moment, the law allows that in the sense that the law just runs, the three laws just run parallel to each other. And so people just do things, and they just, well, the law doesn't allow you to not have to take water without a water license. But I think you know what I'm trying to say, is that the law, because there's no integration, so we made sure that there's a complete synchronization and integration of the whole system, so that at the end of all this, when we pass it, particularly in business circles, there'll be complete and utter certainty as to what are the processes in government from now on. I think this is the first time in government where I've seen this take place. I've never seen it done anywhere else, where all these issues of the different levels of government and different departments are integrated into one system. So you literally, at the end of the story, you have one environmental system that applies now, with the Minister of Mineral Affairs giving a particular role at a particular part of the process. But all of it is in the purview of, and there's a total and utter synchronization. We have also told them to make provision that this whole agreement cannot be amended without both department agreeing, plus Parliament agreeing. Now that's a very unusual thing to write into a law, but we told them to find a way of writing it. It's easy with regulations, you can do it with regulations. It's a bit more difficult with a piece of legislation, but we'll give it a shot. So that those can't be amended, but there has to be agreement. If there's not an agreement here, one of the parties can't then just nilly willy go and start changing the procedure. So I wondered, before we start with the hearing, that people should just clearly understand what it is that we were trying to do if you weren't at the briefing on Thursday, where all the departments were present. Okay. I think that is everything. Did I miss out anything, DJ? That is what we're trying to do. Okay. All right. So the first submission today is Western Cape Department of Environmental Affairs. Old friend there, he's back again. Okay, you're becoming a feature in the committee here. But a welcome one, not an unwelcome one. All right, you know the drill. 10 minutes, try and stick to the amendments, and then we'll engage you possibly on questions. Where is the document? Are they here? All right, the presentation is here, and there's a submission, okay? I see they're not numbered, but so I could probably do it later. Okay.
Thank you, Chair, for obviously the opportunity to provide these old submissions. I'm representing the Department of Environmental Affairs and Development Planning in the Western Cape. My name's Advocate Gary Birch. Just to basically set the background, obviously, to the amendments, obviously, the Chair has...
You don't have to do that. We've been fully and thoroughly gone into that.
Okay.
Don't get back around it.
With the three phases that have been agreed to in the 2008 Amendments Act, the first phase is obviously that the sort of status quo would remain and that the separate decisions and processes would be followed by the different departments. The interim phase is obviously now going to come into force. That'll only commence on the 8th of December 2014. That'll run until the 8th of June 2016. Now, during that period, the Minister of Minerals will become the competent authority in terms of the EIA regulations for that period of 18 months, and the Minister of Water and Environmental Affairs will be the appeal authority. What's important there is that it's relating to prospecting, mining, exploration, and production, as well as related activities. That's important to note as well. The third phase, which I just want to highlight specifically, the third phase in this agreement that was reached between the different ministers in 2008 was that essentially that after that 18-month period, the decision-making would revert back to the environmental authorities. Now, the proposed amendments in terms of Clause 13 and 14 of the National Environmental Laws Amendment Bill repeal Sections 13 and 14. This will basically terminate the third phase. Now, the deletion of the third phase, as I mentioned, will essentially allow for the Minister of Mineral Resources to retain the decision-making authority to issue environmental authorizations in terms of NEMA. And that, again, is for prospecting, mining, exploration, production, as well as related activities. The Western Cape Government and Department of Environmental Affairs and Development Planning does not support that. Now, the key issues which we have with the proposed amendments are simply that we don't support the transfer of the environmental decision-making competencies in terms of the National Environmental Management Act to the Department of Minerals and to the Minister of Mineral Resources. The reasons for this are essentially that the definition of sustainable development in the Mineral Resources, Mineral Petroleum Resources Development Act currently reads, means the integration of social, economic, and environmental factors into planning, implementation, and decision-making so as to ensure that mineral and petroleum resources development serves present and future generations. Now, I just want to highlight, it's ensure that mineral and petroleum resources. While the definition of sustainable development in NEMA currently reads, means the integration of social, economic, and environmental factors into planning, implementation, and decision-making so as to ensure that development serves present and future generations. Now, NEMA calls for sustainable development, and the mineral, or MPRDA, calls for sustainable mineral development.
And if we remove the first definition, how will you feel?
Well, that would obviously change
because the... Because the agreement is that the environmental laws will apply. Hmm. So it can't be two definitions. I mean, just by definition, it can't be.
Well, those two definitions here are in two different acts, and the...
No, but I'm saying, if we were to change it to give effect to what we want to, and therefore get rid of the first one, and the definition of sustainable development is the second one that applies, what will your objection then be?
Which I don't think that will actually affect as much. The competent authority to grant these environmental authorizations would still be the Minister of Mineral Resources. Now, throughout the... I'll go into it a bit further in my presentation, but throughout
I understand, I understand that point, and that's a valid point. But the point is, you're using this as support for your argument. So I'm trying to work out, if I knock those supports out, what is your response?
To remove the issues that we're having with this, you'd essentially have to remove a lot of the MPRDA. The purpose of the Act is a big problem. The definitions throughout the Act, the intention behind the Minerals Act itself, it doesn't... there's almost an inherent conflict between the two pieces of legislation and the intention behind the two pieces of legislation. And that's what we're trying to highlight here.
Yeah, there's an inherent tension between the two. But the Constitution tells us to marry them and balance them and give effect to both, not just the one.
Yes, sir. Essentially, our argument is that allowing the decision-maker to be someone who's responsible for promoting mining leads to a conflict itself, which can't be remedied through... any sort of simple solution like removing the definition or amending that very simply. The issue we're having is that having the Minister of Mineral Resources, whose sole purpose is to promote mining in the country, to also grant environmental decisions, and your environmental decisions, you've got to be mindful, is trying to integrate your environmental, your social, your cultural, and all of your sort of impacts that could have an effect on and definition of environment is obviously quite
we ameliorate that with by two things, by three things. Firstly, by giving the application of the law by the Minister of Minerals. Previously, they in their law said what environmental issues they'll consider. Now we've told them you have to consider ours, our law, when you make those decisions. Secondly, the appeal of what you said to achieve that balance. We've not given it to minerals, we've given it to environment. Ultimately, environment will say, you have not complied with our environmental laws. And thirdly, which wasn't there previously, is that we've now got the protected areas, not protected areas, sensitive mining areas will be excluded completely from mining, and mine wouldn't be able to deal with it. Say, for example, Mapungubwe, etc. So, I hear what you're saying, and I understand the argument, and I understand the tension that exists. But I think what you must do also is, if you want us to deal with all your issues, is also that which is now being created shows what difficulties there would or would not be with that. Because, I mean, obviously that's where the process is going at the moment.
Yes, sir.
I mean, the problem is previously, I'll be blunt about this. In 2008, we made decisions. Today, they have not been implemented. So isn't it? You're just trying to have a law, and you apply it to two and one department can block it. It's no use trying to do that. I mean, we've had it in other instances, for example, in policing with the same thing, where they block laws for 10 years. Now, the issue that they're trying to do now is to find a more amicable, because, I mean, as you say, the Constitution creates tension. But the Constitution also tells us when those tensions exist, both rights must be given equal effect. You can't, underpin the other. So that's the only reason I'm asking these things, not necessarily because I don't agree with you, but the point is we've moved on this debate, and we can't stick back into 2008. And these other issues that they've now tried to ameliorate, to what extent does that help us? I'm interested in, and I will be happy to accept the further submission from you, except which parts of the PMFP, which parts of that, like this definition of sustainable development, still creates maybe a contradiction because of us saying that the environmental laws will apply. So that will be useful if you can give us all those parts of it, okay? Okay, continue.
Essentially, so, I mean, our main submission is that the objects of the MPRDA therefore read the definition of sustainable development contained in the MPRDA. The minister will not be able to, in an unbiased and objective manner, administer NEMA, which calls for sustainable development, which of course is a bit broader than in the MPRDA, which encompasses the most sustainable land use option, as opposed to the MPRDA's call for most sustainable mining option. Our sort of problems there are that if I could give a practical sort of example, mineral resources in the Maxans court matter that went all the way to the Constitutional Court, the Minister of Mineral Resources there granted a mining right and mining license to the applicant to mine sand in the middle of Makassar. Now, that site specifically was bordered by two schools directly bordering that site. The site also contained critically endangered vegetation. Now, of course, mineral resources, in terms of their own act, were supposed to look at environmental factors. None of those issues were raised as sort of problems. Now, what the environmental, your decision in NEMA doesn't only look at whether or not the mining rights should be granted and whether or not mining can be sustainably mined in that site. Your environmental legislation looks at, are there alternative sites which could also be better suited for sand mining? There are numerous other sites that could have been granted a mineral right to mine that sand, which wouldn't have had a bigger impact on the community there.
Now that the minister has the power of appeal, doesn't that change that?
There's still the perception of bias that's going to go out to the general public. And that's quite hard to...
Bias we can't really, I can't legislate for that. I'd love to, but I can't. I mean, how would I legislate a man bias or a woman bias away? I can't.
I'll go into that a bit later on, but what we're arguing essentially is that this is going to lead to increased litigation. It's going to actually halt development more than it's going to further development, because everyone who's aggrieved by these sort of decisions, who would have a perception bias, is one of the sort of pudger review grounds which can be taken to court and that decision set aside. Now, what we're saying is having the competent authority being the Minister of Minerals will lead to an increase in litigation, it will lead to an increase in appeals, and essentially sort of duplication functions in both the environmental and the mineral departments.
How are you going to get minerals to have no role as far as this is concerned? They're not prepared to. So you're talking about something that's just not a reality.
With all due respect, it's the legislature's...
The legislature previously in 2008 set out a case which is in 36 months. We now not even have started. In fact, I'm not sure even why the minerals have put that act into operation. The intention never was to allow that system to kick in. So, you know, we're trying to find alternatives where we can deal with cooperative governance. As much as I may agree with some of your arguments and so on, but the reality of all the things you're saying are just not a reality. It cannot happen.
Well, so if we follow on from this sort of an argument, then the next person or next department or minister to do an approach and cause the same sort of cooperative governance issues will be the Minister of Agriculture. The Minister of Agriculture could then also bring similar...
The Minister of Agriculture has never been in this situation. The laws have never provided for it. So if you can't, that can't happen to it.
Well, Chair, we were arguing the same thing could happen.
The problem you have is that the DNA of this country's economy is minerals. They are a huge, strong lobby. Whether you like it or not, I personally don't like it. My personal view on this, I don't like it. I don't like the kind of power that they have, but that's the reality. Now, it's our job to make the realities work. So I think you must bear that in mind, because you're asking something that's not happened for, what's it now, three, for 5 years. Tell that.
Well, Chair, our submissions are essentially that all the committee would have to do and Parliament would have to do is to the commencement of the amendment assets come into force. So that interim arrangement will come into force and will operate.
Have you read the act? They get rid of all that.
But that's why
the act was going to get rid of all of that until this agreement was agreed.
Chair, if the Portfolio Committee
there's no place in government where that issue has been resolved. Now for 20 years it has been resolved.
Chair, our submissions are essentially that all the Parliament would have to do to remedy the situation is to remove the repeal of Sections 13 and 14 in the Amendment Act.
Parliament can't do that because Parliament doesn't have an agreement on it. The point is, you say we can do certain things. We've done it in 2008. It's just not happened. I mean, the reality has not happened. You can now come and say this. That means that there are pressure and lobby groups that have stopped it. You can say all those things, and you may probably be right. But the reality of it is just not happening. For 5 years, no one has been able to do what you said.
And Chair,
now we've come up with an agreement where, for the first time ever, those acts have been... the PMR, all reference of environment is going to be removed from there. The competent authority within our law is going to be applied. And if there are some contradictions, like you said, we'll amend that. But in the end of the day, that's going to be the reality. I can't see it going any other way. So, again, now we've heard you, and I respect your views on it. But all I'm just saying, that approach hasn't taken us anywhere. We've not been able to resolve the issue. Okay. Other issues? Any other issues?
Let me just go through.
So the increase of fields.
Yes, so Chair, we're essentially saying it will be contrary to streamlining the actual environmental management for environmental authorizations to actually be processed by different departments, obviously depending on industry, as opposed to a department that's actually tasked with the management of environmental affairs of the country for a whole.
You made those points. Don't ask about that. What other new points have you got?
The other issue, and I guess our alternative arguments should... our submissions not be put forward would be that if the competent authority is going to be Minister of Minerals for the mining, prospecting, and for those specific list of activities, we argue that the associated activity should not be granted by the Minister of Minerals. So if you look at the definition of mining area that the MPRDA actually proposes, that mining area includes adjacent land, it includes any adjacent land or any land that's connected through any infrastructure or service. So essentially your power line that connects your city to a mine would essentially, everything in between those could be, well, between those two properties could be interpreted as being the mining area. Your adjacent land could also all be interpreted as being part of that mining area.
Adjacent land also belonging to someone else?
Yes, Chair.
You say?
So the definition of mining area is so broad that it actually encompasses half of the Western Cape. And if that's allowed to go through as well, the Minister of Mineral Resources would essentially be the competent authority for granting a lot more of the applications than is actually in intention right now. So we would ask you to look carefully at the proposed definition of mining area in the Mineral Resources Act. Then also the specific list of activities in NEMA, which would be the ones that are specifically relating to mining and prospecting. Now, I understand that the, I guess, portfolio committee is set on having that as being the competent authority for being minerals. We would then argue that the associated activities should be the environmental authorities. Now, those associated activities would include removal of critically endangered vegetation, the construction within 32 meters of a water course, the construction of certain types of roads. We would argue that those associated activities, and it should be made abundantly clear that those should be the environmental authorities that should be the competent authority for those. I'd also like to highlight that the proposed amendments to this act now actually remove the competency of the provincial ministers, because the national minister would be the competent authority for granting the first your first instance decision, and then the national minister would be the competent authority as the appeal authority, whereas currently it would actually be the provincial minister. So
what does the provincial minister do in mine?
No, that the provincial minister would be granting these associated activities. So the provincial minister at the moment is the competent authority for granting authorization for the removal of your critically endangered vegetation, and for all of your activities in the IA regulations, in your listing notice 1, 2, and 3. So where your minister, your provincial minister's competent authority, all of those powers are actually being removed, and the constitutionality of that should also be looked at, Chair. So essentially our alternative submission would be that the associated activities should remain with the environmental authorities. And the arguments there are that the provincial ministers have a lot more detailed background on the local situation in the area, are aware of what the sensitive issues are related to their province and to the specific municipalities within the province itself. Obviously, all the different provinces have very different biodiversity, and those issues should be...
I haven't looked at this issue, but let's assume we keep it as it is, which we haven't yet. Let's assume that. Then will that, I mean, you're saying the knowledge is with the provinces and so on. Will it help then in the appeal process that the provinces are given a definite opportunity to put forward whatever they would want to on that issue?
Well, Chair, you're essentially relegating the provincial minister to a competing authority where he is the competent authority at the moment. Now, environment is a concurrent...
It's all changing now. Even the minister is losing some of her...
Well, Chair...
So, you know, the provinces are not unique in that sense.
Although
that would be the policy decisions that the government would take, but I'm just asking, does it help at least if you give a specific role for the provinces in the appeal process, or don't you think that will help at all?
Well, Chair, the province would be a commenting authority anyway, and would be able to comment, but the taking away the decision-making power would have constitutional implications. Environment is a concurrent power in the Constitution and the schedules, and I guess you're actually taking away those powers with us. Well, essentially the Amendment Act would be...
I mean, if you go and look at Section 125 of the Constitution, you can take... we can pass a lawyer to take all powers away from province, administer powers. The Constitution allows us to do that. The Constitution is a mechanism that's there, so it's not going to create a constitution.
essentially what you're going to potentially create a situation is that environment, you're going to create a situation where in order to protect the environment for the provinces and the provincial interest in the environment, provincial authorities would have to create their own environmental legislation, which would be a separate legislation and would not be able to be overridden by national legislation like NEMA.
Of course it can override it. Section 134 of the Constitution tells you can override it.
Through a national legislation, you could.
You override, and the courts, if they interpret section, I think it's section 134, 143, it tells you which will take precedence. And uniformity, all those things, national takes precedence.
Provinces and local municipalities, through bylaws, could, of course, create their own legislation, which could have an additional.
You can do it.
Essentially saying, Chair, that you might create a situation through trying to shorten an area. Would shorten the processes where you're actually going to create more red tape and more authorizations that are going to be needed. So instead of actually shortening a process, you actually could create more authorizations which would be revised.
Well, this is shortened and it's consequential. So you can't tell me it's not going to be better. Of course it's going to be better. We've got chaos now. At the moment there's chaos. There are something like 40 or 50 mining licenses in this country where they mine without a water license. Most of them haven't had EIAs done. That's the chaos that exists today.
Chair, again, that's a company that's operating illegally. So
that's the chaos that exists in the present system. That's what the present system creates. This one changes all that. These days now, no one tells them you can't. Not they have to act consequentially like we're doing now in this one. But anyway, we're back at the same point. I mean, your point is you just don't like this, which is fine. I mean, it's a valid point. But you know, we're arguing about the spending over there just in different ways. So
I will
definitely look at your issue of the mining thing carefully.
And also, Chair, if you've got a close look at the associated activities as well.
Well, that's what I mean. That whole mining definition. And what it is that mining can do. We'll look at that very close.
Thank you, Chair.
Also, as I said, if there are any other definitions other than sustainable development where there's an incongruity, also let me have those here.
Yes, sir.
In the two laws.
Yeah, so the key issues we thought it would lead to an increase in appeals, and it would lead to a conflict of interest, having numerous decisions being reviewed.
Well, I mean, it must be quite honest with you, I don't mind appeals, because it means that the Minister of Environment is going to make the final decision. I'm actually happy with that. I haven't got any problems with that.
Although it's a lengthy process, so essentially you...
We've cut it down.
We do have another...
You go into the regulations, you see we've cut it down now to three different processes. A 30-day process, a 60-day, and a 90-day. Easy one, 30 days. Difficult one, 60 days. The complicated one, 90. So we've cut all that down.
Chair, let's take one more submission. On Clause 4, it's an amendment to Section 24O, subsection 3. It's unclear why the time periods for State Department's consultation. Their commenting period has been reduced from 40 days to 30 days. Now, the issues we have here is that this leads to an increased administrative burden. Budget itself calls for a minimum of 30 days consultation period. The commenting authorities are already experiencing challenges in meeting the 40-day commenting period. Now, reducing this to a 30-day period would actually, in essence, mean that you're going to have a lot less comments from state departments. The reason why state departments were given 40 days instead of a 30-day commenting period was that because your state departments are obviously large institutions, there are a number of administrative processes that have to go through in order to get those comments signed off. So effectively you're giving the commenting authorities almost 20 days, actually even less, because of the amount of working days.
Okay, we'll look at that. Maybe what we can do is we can also create two periods there. The easy and the difficult ones, but we'll have a look at that, okay? I agree with you, very complex one, so we need a bit more time.
Okay.
Okay. Anything else?
Chair, besides the issues already raised, I just refer to, I guess, our written comments submitted. They just detail a bit more in terms of what we've actually presented. Otherwise, no further comments.
There are specific ways of limiting some of this. If you want me, want us to look at it, just send it to us. Okay, thank you very much. Questions, comments, very clear. There's obviously an in-principle issue, and then there's some specific issues, particularly around the definitions and how wide it's making it or not. That's Kusana.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I've been listening very attentively when the gentleman is giving us a presentation. But really, in actual fact, when we draft the bills or the legislations, we consider the democratic situation that we find ourselves as South Africans and thinking for the masses, because this is their government anyway. And but when I listen to the presentation, the ideology that I get, the ideology which arises, it becomes a federal ideology that arises from the presentation. As far as I'm listening, Western Cape is a government within the democratic country, and of which it's supposed to give an input to any legislation, to any department that it links with. But now here the ideology is that it seems Western Cape is having a different ideology to the bill itself. But I will encourage more literature that they must make their submissions directly with the department so that they can see and try to look to these issues together rather than make a public presentation for maybe they meet the department. That's the information that I get. Well, if you read from page 4, where they talk about the biasness, the law doesn't apply like that. You don't have a biasness or whatever in the law. A law is a law, and it must take its course to everybody, or it must take its course to every state or organ of state. Therefore, we sympathize with the provincial department. Their input is correct at some stage, but this federal ideology really gives me a problem. Finding myself debating something which is encouraging federal ideology to say, we as Western Cape, we as Malango, we as Gauteng, should think we must always find ourselves within a democratic state, within democratic ideology, so that we strengthen our legislation and so on. Thanks very much.
Chair, may I just respond to
anything? Any other questions? Anything else? Seems clear. Okay, yes, sir.
I thought it's worthwhile just mentioning that at the Working Group 11, which is the working group for, it's in the environmental affairs sort of working groups, essentially the legal representatives working group, so the legal and policy. The submissions I've just made in relation to who the competent authority is in relation to mining and the associated activities, the submissions I've made were actually supported by all of the provinces that attend that working group. Throughout the process, we've highlighted that we do have fundamental issues with this. The legislation can, of course, create for the Minister of Minerals to be the competent authority. Our arguments on the bias thing are that courts are likely to set aside a number of these decisions on a perception of bias. You don't need actual bias for a court to set it aside. Just the perception of bias by the decision maker, or that the process, there's a perception bias in the process itself, could lead to a decision being set aside. My main function within the department is to defend environmental decisions. So I spend most of my time defending these environmental decisions in court. We've got approximately 60 sort of litigation cases on at the moment, just in the Western Cape. Now, our submission is essentially this is going to lead to an increase in litigation. The only people that are actually going to benefit from this are your attorneys and your advocates. And it's also going to slow down development rather than increase development, because you're going to go through a process where the Minister of Minerals will make a decision. That would then potentially be appealed to the national minister. They'll have to go through a further process. And once that process is followed, you go through a review application, which can take up to 3 years. And then that decision can be challenged in the High Court, the Supreme Court, and then the Constitutional Court as well. So what our submissions are, is that this actually could hamper development more than promote development. But that's... Thank you, Chair.
I understand the argument. Okay, thank you very much, once again.
Thank you, Chair.
Always useful to have Western Cape, yeah. Next submission is... Who? Dr. Rama. Also another local, almost... Do you have a flat in Cape Town now? You know the drill, 10 minutes? Doctor?
Yes.
Welcome. Nice to have you here again. Do you have a slide? Huh? Oh, yeah. Okay. There's a slide presentation.
I think I'd like to, first of all, thank the people working around this EMBLA process and coordination and integration effort that's taking place. I think it's really going to improve a lot of environmental management processes in our view, and it's really, really appreciated by our members. So briefly, I'll just discuss some of the issues that we have identified that may pose a bit of a challenge to us in the cement sector and perhaps other sectors. In general, we agree with all the development taking place, so the focus of our presentation will mainly be around some of the implementation challenges, and perhaps somehow that could influence some of the thinking in terms of the amendments. I think the first area that we'd like to talk about is the management of residues and stockpiles in terms of the Waste Act. Now, I think, yes, many of these residues, stockpiles are indeed waste, but I think there could be some unforeseen consequences. We heard earlier this morning around associated activities, mining areas, etc. And I think cement production probably falls under this particular constraint as well. So, for example, if we were to quarry some stones and find have some of these materials screened, we use the fine materials for our purposes, there'll be some of the aggregates left behind which will downgrade, and that could now easily be considered as residues. Stockpiles become waste, and I think that's an unintended consequence possibly, because those residues could be used for construction purposes, road construction, building construction, etc. And we believe that shouldn't be classified as a waste, otherwise we require waste permit, landfill regulations apply, etc., and really that wouldn't improve overall environmental performance. So I believe the definitions of waste, byproduct, associated definitions should be reviewed, so that the unforeseen consequences are not happening once residues, etc., would be managed accordingly. Then we also have the question of where these material stockpiles could be declared waste, and perhaps in many instances rightfully waste. Perhaps the Waste Act should also consider the end of waste status protocol, so that the beneficiation programs, etc., could be efficiently undertaken by industry rather than going through the regulatory mechanisms which would serve no real environmental benefits.
What are you suggesting? I mean, those definitions you're talking about, are they in the Waste Act or are they in this act? It's the Waste Act's coming, but I mean, that's why I'm asking. These amendments, are they actually meant for the Waste Act?
Yes, because...
suggesting.
Yes, these... the residue stockpiles now are going to be moved under management by the Waste Act.
Yeah.
And hence, there's an implication of the Waste Act on these residues.
Yeah, but the point is, if it's the Waste Act you want us to amend, then that, only when that bill comes in, and we can look at those issues. At the moment, the principle is what it is, and that stockpiles that are now going to the mining minister. But the definition of the Waste Act, we can only look at those definitions. That act at the moment is the law advisor. We have another read. That's a link, but the definition that he wants us to amend the good doctor. What I'm asking is, aren't those definitions in the Waste Act? Because I hear what he's saying, that he would want us to amend it, but I mean, we can only really look at that when we get to the Waste Act. We don't have the Waste Act in front of us, so, well, I'm just trying to say, I hear what you're saying, but not having the Act in front of us, I can't engage with you on it. So I'm just trying to get clarity on it. So what you're now talking about is amendment somewhere else. Because of this amendment, there's a link created.
Yes, that's correct, and needs to be looked at holistically. I think the other option is perhaps leaving it in NEMA and not the Waste Act, because the Waste does define any unused, surplus, unwanted material as waste in any case. You know, why should be even in the Waste Act? Could be in NEMA, the definition. But I think perhaps the department has deliberated on this matter, because we don't have to have a list of everything in the Waste Act. The Waste definition clearly defines any unwanted, surplus, and a whole range of other adjectives. If they comply to that, then the material object becomes a waste, and it becomes by the Waste Act. So that is an option which they may have considered or should consider.
Okay. So don't go into the specifics now of those waste amendments. Anything else on this Act?
I think combines an enforcement. The current provisions of NEMA does not empower the Minister of Mineral Resources to enforce compliance with environmental matters for those activities, while it does allow the Minister and the Department to enforce the mine-related activities. I think the consequence of this is that amendment would empower the Minister of Minerals to designate officials within the Department of Mineral Resources subject to certain conditions, as is indicated in the amendments. Now, the key question is, subject to certain conditions, does that imply that they will also have to go through the grading system like the Department of Environment Affairs? And if that is the case, then obviously...
Now, they're going to go through all the training and...
Yes.
We're going to train them.
That's correct. So I think that's the transitional period that will need to be taken into account then, and that's really what we're saying, that how it work. I think the other important area would be the impact on business or the mining activity, where we might get the minerals inspector coming on day one, the environment affairs on day two, the air quality on day three, and the provincial EIP on day four. And I think this has an impact on not only the work process, but all the health and safety at our places. So I think somehow that coordination is quite critical. And for implementation purposes, perhaps some coordination needs to take place in terms of compliance, promotion, enforcement. Because it does currently impact business activities at our sites. And that's really the cooperative governance issues. I think the alignment with PAJA, we really appreciated it. And I've spoken about the different inspector issues, for example, and the application processes, and the appeal process and site visits. All these require some level of cooperative governance, and we hope that will be part of the outcomes once amendments take place. I think conclusion, we'd like to say the alignment taking place is really commendable. The current effort to improve systems across all spheres of government is also very encouraging. However, we'd like to recommend that the department establish sound cooperative governance and implementation systems to ensure different regulatory functions dealing with DMR and the different environmental authorities are aligned, because all three spheres of government. Inspectors from the Department of Environmental Affairs and Department of Minerals harmonize the activities to avoid unnecessary duplications during site visits. And then obviously when we discuss the NEMWA, once these become regulated through the Waste Act definition, then I think there needs to be appropriate amendments in that act as well. Thanks, Chair.
So your amendment there, you want to... amendment then was to include end of waste status protocol. Just a reminder, what is that?
That
we dropped this protocol.
No, incident that really comes from the EU and a lot of.
So you want us to import the EU into South Africa?
Well, I think
Europe. Have we got enough white people here already? Too many of them. They're creating all the problems.
Yes.
Have to create more white stuff here. Yeah. End of waste problem. Okay. Look, when that act comes, let's have a look at that. Let's have a look at what the Europeans do.
Thanks.
See whether it's worth it. My experience, all they do is they dump into third world countries. That's all they do. But okay. I'm just biased. All right. Questions, comments? Thanks, doctor. Quick questions, comments? Obviously, the waste stuff, we hear what the doctor is saying and we look at that then. But on the other issues, any comments? I think this issue of the enforcement stuff, there is a bit of a worry to me there, but it's not a, it's more worry of harmonization and how they're going to work and so on. But we'll see how that goes. Any comments? Any questions? Seems relatively clear. No one? Doctor, thank you very much once again. Go back to your nice flat in Cape Town. Unluckily you've come when the weather is terrible, but okay. All right, so that is the second one. Third one is the Treasure Karoo, Miss Gay LaRue. Man. She's no PowerPoint. Okay. You know the drill, where is she? 10 minutes, and then we'll ask questions and comments.
Submission, and I suppose it's not going to vary very much from other submissions that you've received. Following the recent proposed changes to the MDRDA, it is clear that the proposed amendments to the National Environmental Management Laws aim to provide for a streamlined and integrated system to deal with environmental matters related to mining operations. While we support a simplified and integrated system for environmental matters and mining operations, we have significant concerns about the assigned authority of the Department of Minerals to deal with environmental authorizations and environmental matters related to mining and petroleum applications. The mandate of the Department of Minerals relates to the development of the mining sector in South Africa, not environmental protection, where the Department of Environmental Affairs mandate relates directly to sustainable development and environmental protection. In addition to the Department of Environmental Affairs mandate being aligned to dealing with environmental matters, this department is also better suited in terms of its capacity, historical knowledge and experience in environmental matters, including EIS, than the Department of Mineral Resources. It simply cannot be expected of a department whose mandate is to develop the mineral resources of a country to assume responsibility for environmental protection and compliance. By 2012, more than 5,800 derelict and owner-less mines have been acknowledged by the Minister of Mineral Resources. On the basis of the unsatisfactory record of the Department of Minerals as discussed above, we are of the view that there is currently a lack of capacity, financial and practical, for sufficient law enforcement, technical monitoring and inspection. It is thus unlikely that the situation can be expected to improve in the foreseeable future, especially in light of the expected increase in additional mining and petroleum applications. The environmental authorization process for mining applications...
It's a bit unfair, isn't it? That's a bit unfair to blame the present department for things that have been done since the turn of the previous century. I mean, a lot of the derelict mines and stuff are all from the apartheid era. Mm-hmm. And agreements made by the apartheid minister, was he Botha? And he said the state will take over all those mines that are derelict. So it's a bit unfair to blame them now for that mess.
But even the current state with illegal mining, Minister Shabanga recently said that she was shocked at the current rates and the extent of illegal mining occurring at the moment.
Blame them for that, but I mean, well, I'm just saying, blame them for what they have done since. But I mean, to blame them for all 5,800 derelict mines, it's a bit heavy.
Okay, thanks.
Blame our forefathers. You are the Ru, I'm at the Langa. Our Buddha forefathers are citizens, unfortunately.
Point taken.
Okay.
The environmental authorization process for mining applications should not be different to any other form of development, whether it is a housing development or an oil refinery, as all environmental impacts need to be thoroughly evaluated before a decision is made on the application. Where normally an EIA would be conducted first, and only if authorized followed by an EMP, in mining applications, EMPs are submitted along with applications for prospecting rights, and only once the exploration licenses have been issued does the EIA process commence. The risk and the reality is that in practice, it is very seldom that a production right is denied after successful exploration has taken place, even if environmental impacts may be significant. EIAs need to be conducted before a decision is made on even the exploration license, which also often entails environmental impacts. Within the context of new and contentious mining technologies being proposed in areas with relatively unknown and complex geology and environments, such as shale gas mining in the Karoo, deeming an EMP sufficient to obtain an exploration right is to abrogate the intent and spirit of the environmental protection and management as underpinned by the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa.
Thanks. You weren't here last Thursday, were you?
Mm-hmm.
At the input. I think you must take a set of those documents. Where's that document? And anyone that was here on Thursday, please do so, because from your comments I can see that you're not aware of the process. What we're trying to do is to try and, we're looking at all three laws at once and all three sets of regulations at once. So, I mean, yeah, you're saying that the one follows the other. Well, that's all going to go away. And that's in the documentation. That there's, what we've done is, we said, okay, if you're going to do this and you're going to make these compromises, then we want a completely integrated and synchronized system. That you cannot give a mining license until there's an EIA, until there is a water license, and so on. And all the steps are set out in all the amendments to the regulations. And so I think have a good look at that. If you want further comments, you can also make it. I mean, I understand your overall point. And for me, it's a very valid point in any case. But this thing hasn't worked for 20 years. And in my experience in government, it's not going to work for the next 20 years. And this agreement that has been reached, it's the kind of agreement where no one likes it. And that is the kind of agreement I like. If no one likes it, then you know it's a good one. It may not solve everything, but what it does do for the first time, when I joined Environment, the first thing I saw was the lack of synchronization and integration. And the mere fact that you've got, I think it's 40, 50 mines that are mining without water licenses. I don't know how many of them are mining without EIAs. This agreement takes all that possibility away. It now puts the onus on the minute of mining that only at a certain stage if certain things have been complied, then can she consider the mining license.
Would that apply also to exploration phase or only for the production phase?
I think the exploration, of course, you're allowed to, whatever is allowed to be looked at. But when you get any step further, where now real things are going to, real consequences, all those then are very strictly aligned. And in fact, even the appeal processes have to be finalized before you can go to the next step. And the appeal process rests with the Minister of Environment. So, I always say that if someone makes submissions to me, I say, I have been told by medical doctors that a woman can never be half pregnant. You're either pregnant or you're not pregnant. This one is a bit of a half pregnant situation. I think there's a hope of pregnancy, but it's not necessarily there. I think what one is looking here is to make sure from now on that all the issues of environment is taken out of the mining laws, that only the environmental laws apply to mining. The Minister of Mining is given a role as far as the competent authority maker, but the final appeal is with the Minister of Environment. So that all issues can then. And of course, there's appeal processes also that have to be finalized. And then all of it's synchronized. So have a look at that. If you want to make further submission, you can also make it. Okay. Comments? Questions? quite a clear situation. There's no specific suggestions. Anyone know? Thank you, ma'am. Thanks for being once again. Thanks for taking the time. All right. Did you give a... Center for Environmental Rights, this is for Ree, also another regular. See Dr. Rama. See Dr. Rama and Advocate Birch are all kind of locals here, they're regulars.
Conservation South Africa, Endangered Wildlife Trust,
Federation for Sustainable Environment, Greenpeace Africa, Groundwork, WWF, South Africa, and also support by Professor Tracy Humby at the University of the Witwatersrand Law School. I've mentioned them by name because I want you to understand how seriously people took this, and they all worked together on a number of different proposals, but this is one of them. We have quite fundamental concerns about why we don't like these powers to be given to the Department of Mineral Resources and the Minister of Mineral Resources, and we'll be very frank about the data legacy of mistrust and disappointment around these issues in the department. So very briefly, set out in detail in our written submissions, and I don't want to take up too much time, but just those six reasons we've put up why we think this is a fundamentally bad and not a good way for our regulatory regime to be going. The first deals with capacity issues, and you've heard a little bit about that. We see in the documents from last...
We've asked for an implementation plan once all this is completed. So we've asked for an implementation plan.
Honourable Chair,
I think it's a $43 million budget for mine and so on. So I it's a concern of ours as well, but we're going to try and deal with it through an implementation plan.
And that would be our plea to this committee and to the other committee, is to ensure proper resourcing and accountability. I mean, Honourable Chair, just while you mentioned that figure, we see in the documents from last week there's an allocation of 65.9 million rand to the DMR. The DA alone spent in 2011-12 70 million rand on their regulatory function, and these are people who only
DA.
The DEA. I can't speak for the DA, fortunately. So to give you a sense, that's already more in 1 year spent by the DEA, and they only process, as you know, just over 10% of the EIAs in the country. So, you know, we're worried about that. We're, of course, extremely worried about the DMR's track record on this. As far as we're concerned, there's a track record of very poor decisions around granting rights in areas where they should never be granted, and we'll be providing more information in our presentation. I think enforcement could at best be called negligible efforts by the department on environmental matters. We can give lots of examples. Just recently, this last year, we've seen 4 criminal cases against mining companies. Who prosecuted those cases? Where was the DMR? Sole involvement was community, civil society organizations, the DEA, and the National Prosecuting Authority. The DMR was not in that picture. And those are only 4 cases in about 2 years that we've seen. So that deals with number 2. Number 3, the inherent conflict issue. I don't need to explain that. Of course, there's a fundamental problem here, and it's not unique to South Africa, but there's a problem with the obligation to promote mining and also to realize environmental rights. It's an inherent conflict, and that's why we believe this is not a great way to go. If we think that it continues the unjustifiable special treatment for the mining industry, while we don't see the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries granting new authorizations to farmers, or the Department of Transport giving environmental authorizations to SANRAL, somehow the DMR deserves special treatment, which we believe is not appropriate. Constitutional difficulties, we just mentioned that briefly around Section 24 and also provincial issues. We're worried about the complete exclusion of provinces from this regime, where environment is in fact a national shared function between national and provincial.
What role do they play until now? What is water taking away from them?
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it's not that it's... So, of course, mining... This is, Chair, it's a very complicated issue. They do not have a role in mining right now, but maybe they should have all along because of the environmental aspect. So mining has always been regarded as a national function, which it is, but, of course, it has an environmental component. And from that point of view, no, there's certainly an argument you made that provinces should have some influence.
I mean, constitutionality, I'm not very worried about, because for the first time you're applying environmental laws. Only environmental laws apply, not separate laws. And the final appeal authority rests with the Minister of Mining.
So where are the provinces then?
No, they've never had a role in mining.
I mean, the fact that it's always been unconstitutional doesn't mean that this law is not unconstitutional.
It's not unconstitutional. It's unconstitutional.
All
right. I mean, if you don't give something a power which they don't have, they've never had it and they won't have it. I've looked at the constitutionality, and of course, I mean, the guys are free to take it to the courts, and maybe that's the way to grind the thing to a halt, I don't know. But the reality of it is, it's for the first time ever that actually environment is going to now fall within the purview of environment, and the Minister of Environment is going to have the final say.
Yeah, exactly for that reason, the Honourable Chair. because it's under the environmental legislation, I think that provinces should also have a say. So we'll leave it at that.
It's a national competence. Provinces don't have a say.
But it's not a national competence. It's a shared...
It's taken in the NEMA. We've given national competence to the national minister. Provinces don't play a role. That's the way to deal with concurrent powers.
I'm actually worried about, I need to make some specific comments, I'll just quickly mention this. So we asked, we just mentioned that we're very worried about the feasibility. When I talk about Mistrata, I want to communicate to the committee the level and intensity of our feelings about this. In other committee, we used the example of Christy Smear. The minister gave her a public notice of her intention to declare Christy Smear as a prohibited area of mining, and we've never been able to find that government gazette. And we've asked repeatedly, we've written numbers of letters, we are completely ignored, and so we worry about these sort of things, and we hope that these changes will assist, but we're very skeptical. So, in ending
there, one thing that's going to help you, of course, is that now all the processes are outlined carefully. And whatever legal action you want to take is much stronger position. So now the regulation has been amended, and certain things must happen in certain ways. And if it's not like that, then they're breaching the law. Well, you don't have any of that now.
I think I've made very clear that overall we see a lot of improvements. So it's not we are, however, it's important that we point out concerns and weaknesses.
When I ask you a question, I mean, it's to get clarity and to let you respond to what I think are positive concerns.
Thanks.
So that we look at it.
Okay. All right.
This is not Nirvana. It is definitely not Nirvana. I don't have the impression of Nirvana.
Baby. So, Chair, I'm just going to turn out to a couple of, four slides with specific things. I'll just mention them briefly. The department has seen the submissions, so they know what we're talking about. The first one relates to financial provision. There's been a shift, obviously, from those particular statutory provisions in the MPRDA to NEMA. We are concerned that there are some things that are out of sync in 24P and 24R of NEMA. We wanted to draw to your attention the specific report that's been done by one of our partners, WWF, on financial provision. We're looking forward to working with the department in developing new regulations. We're assuming that there are going to be new regulations because they, of course, not fall away out of the MPRDA regulations. So, this is one of the examples of the fantastic
change. Look at the regulations. They're there in your package. Look at the regulations. And if you have any comments on it, I'll still accept comments. I mean, there won't be further hearings, but any written comments you can keep on sending if there are things that you find are missing.
Thanks very much.
That's why we've said they must give us all three legislation and all three sets of regulations, so particularly people that have expertise can look at them and doesn't create that coherent whole that we're trying to say. So please, if there are things missing like this, you must give us no immediate thing.
Thanks, we'll definitely do that. And the partner's always receptive, so we appreciate that. So this is one of the examples of a great change, for example, of the financial provision. Also, it has the potential of making it applicable beyond mining, which, of course, is quite rapid. Why should this only apply to mining and other industrial activities with long-term environmental impact? All right, so that's just financial provision. In clause 4, as you can imagine, we don't like reduction of time periods consultation. We are extremely concerned about the state departments like provincial authorities and agencies who sit with a lot of the biodiversity information already struggling to meet these deadlines. So, PACHA gives a minimum. It doesn't say that that's appropriate for the situation, so we definitely don't like that. On the enforcement side, I heard a lot of people talk about that already this morning. We just make a couple of general points about the importance of integrating these, what we call EMRIs and GATSRIs, into the inspectorate. We are also a bit concerned that there's going to be some attempt to limit the normal EMI's mandate, and we've given some reasons in our written submission why it's not a good idea.
We've said to the department, not just on enforcement, on every, let's go and read through everything and see where we need safety clauses. One of them was on enforcement. So that if there isn't the capacity and they're not doing their job, create a safety clause that automatically means your environment people get involved. If the safety clause kicks in, then they can be involved. So we have asked them to look at safety clauses to make sure that if we've given a task at one place and that it doesn't grind the whole system to a halt, that there will be powers to intervene. So we have asked them to look at that thing. Obviously, we've only last week, so they haven't come back.
Okay, that's very encouraging. Thanks, Jay. That's what we support, definitely. All right, so Rule 7 on appeals, probably our biggest concern. I hope we've misread it. Please correct me if I'm wrong. But we are a bit worried. We see in the flowchart that was given handed out last week that it's also been a prerequisite for an MPRDA decision being that the appeal must be finalized. We worry that that's not reflected in the legislation. We've gone through it quite carefully, and we've also offered, in fact, this is so important to us that we would get council's opinion and see if we can come up with a solution. As again, if we've misread it,
what's the fantastic.
So the first one talks about an appeal decision on EIA authorization, environmental authorization being a prerequisite for a decision on the MPRDA. So in other words, the whole appeal must be finalised before the MPRDA decision is made. We just don't see that in the legislation. In fact, the appeal and suspension provisions in both the MPRDA Amendment Bill and NEMA are quite confusing, particularly in the MPRDA Amendment Bill. So we just worried about that.
We made it clear in the regulations, or I've told them to make it clear in the regulations that clearly, I mean, appeal processes must be exhausted.
Okay.
But we're not going to be flexible appeal processes. We can't do that. They're going to be inflexible. So they're going to be strict appeal processes. They must be dealt with.
Sure.
And before you can move to the next step.
Sure.
That must be clear. I mean, you cannot move, while there's an appeal pending against a EIA, you cannot proceed with a license application. Because it hasn't been finalized, you haven't got a final decision. So the regulations, please read through those regulations. They're not clear.
All right. I feel like I've drawn it to the attention of the prosody, so we'll look at it again.
No, we're on board with that.
Thanks. That's great. I mean, you can imagine from a civil society perspective, our biggest fear is that, you know, of course we have rights of appeal, that's fantastic. The problem is, considering the impact, if you've seen what a large bulldozer can do in a few weeks' time, the damage that can be caused, you know, that those suspension provisions and making sure that those processes are exhausted.
No, I mean, I must say publicly again that this committee is participating in this agreement and making sure it takes place on the basis that it creates those certainties and that it creates sequential event. We've done it on that basis for certainty. And also for industry. Industry must know that if that process is exhausted, then of course they're not happy with the decision, then they can do whatever they want to. But we have made it very clear that as far as we are concerned as a committee, if we have to make a compromise on this issue, it must be on the basis of making sure that every step takes place. There never again in this country must be a case that a mine starts without a water license, without EIAs, and without those things. And of course there are other conditions as well along the way, but at least those things should never happen again. And if those regulations don't say that, then
right.
Please show me where they're going.
All right.
We'll tighten it up.
All right, great. Thank you, Chair. All right, it's just two other points. So this next point relates to the amendment that NEMLAB 3 makes to NEMWA. So I'm not sure, Chair, if you want to, shall I just mention that?
No, that's fine. It's just
the
doctor wanted to make amendments there already, and I think that's premature.
All right.
But the way the link is concerned, of course, you can comment on that.
All right, so then just briefly, of course, we strongly support the inclusion of residue stockpiles and deposits under NEMWA. We think it's very appropriate that must be regulated finally under environmental legislation. As you can imagine, we don't like the fact that the Minister of Mineral Resources is going to issue licenses. We have worries about implementation. You could just refer to all those thousands of hectares of unrehabilitated mine tailings, farm dams in Gauteng to see what the problem is. And then secondly, a constitutional concern. We do worry about that also again in relation to provinces because of the considering the area that these sites take up, it actually has an effect on land use planning. So we just flag that issue also something to consider.
What's the WML is?
Sorry, that's the waste management license.
A waste management license has been given by the Minister of Mining.
Sorry,
waste management license is going to be given by the Minister of in the mining area. And is that part of the appeal process as well? Okay. Amendments.
All right. The very last point that we made is quite an interesting one, which relates to the loss of some provisions from the MPRDA when the 2008 Amendment Act came into effect. We just highlighted two of them there. So, ironically, the MPRDA, of course, has some very useful provisions in relation to environmental management that was never used. So one of them is that the directors of a company or members of the CC are jointly and severally liable for non-compliance with obligations under the EMPR, regardless of whether it was inadvertently or advertently caused. So that's civil liability, joint and several liability for directors of a company. So that provision has now been lost. So we've been pointing it out as the process has developed, but so we argued even on the MPRDA side that that should then transfer to NEMA. But again, there's also no reason why this should apply to mining only. That should be the same for all industries. That provision doesn't exist in company law. It's only shareholders or a company who can take that kind of action. So this would be an actual provision available to the state to recover costs. So that's quite an interesting one to consider. And the second one relates to the obligation to consider the comments of the State Department. This is a little bit probably not entirely necessary because application is PAJA, but it has been removed, and that, so there's no longer that obligation to consider the comments of any State Department expressly. And in our experience in the last few years, particularly dealing with officials of the Department of Mineral Resources, that they like things to be spelled out in the legislation. If we argue something in terms of the constitution of PAJA, it's really not very well received with respect. So the more express it could be, the better from our point of view. These are not, sorry, just for clarity, that first section there, we're not talking about Section 34 of NEMA. Section 34 of NEMA that gives direct liability only kicks in when you've got a criminal conviction. It's very important to understand that. So you need to have that prosecution and a successful prosecution before you can use those provisions. And it's got to be linked to an offence. This is not linked to an offence. This is about non-compliance of the EMPR. So it's a very powerful provision that we've lost and the status is sort of lost in the process. So just something to consider. Thank you, Chair. That's actually all we wanted to say. Our written submissions are quite detailed, so we'll leave it at that. If that's
thank you. Thank you very much. Any comments? Any questions? Seems very clear. I want the department Wednesday's hearings or Thursday, whenever it was, plus these hearings again, I want to, the usual done. Every single amendment that has been suggested, listed, your comments next to it so that we can see. I mean, there was some of the inputs this morning, there's some technical suggestions, and then here there were specific amendments suggested. I want our comments on it, okay? Like the usual manner that we do this when we go through it, okay? And then, as I said, Ms. Marie, please, and I'm sure you can engage the department as well if you don't understand, go through those regulations. They've been amended. We haven't had an input yet on the regulations themselves. We will do so when we start discussing these amendments, so we haven't looked at them. So if you have any suggestions there and it doesn't capture what we've got here, please let us know. Although the department has done a few, I think the only changes we've suggested so far is that all the appeal procedures for all four or five licenses in the environmental area, all those appeal procedures should be through the minister, not where they are now. And on water, we've got changes, and then these intervention clauses. We ask them to look at those as well, so the system doesn't grind to halt because there's no power to intervene. Those we've also suggested. Otherwise, I'm told that everything should be in the documentation. So if you want to send any further comments, please be welcome to this. Thank you very much. And again, you know, now that you are here and you represent all of them, I want to say to you that we take this matter very seriously. It's taken us, one of the first inputs I had when I sat here was around this issue of mining and environment. And from that moment onwards, we've been pushing the departments to try and sort this issue out. And in an ideal world, there would be probably better solutions to the matter in some of our opinions. But of course, this is a matter that hasn't been resolved 20 years. And we have set our stall as a committee that we want to be part of getting some solution. It may not suit everyone and everyone may not be happy with it, but we want to leave something here that at least creates some certainty and so on. Obviously, we would assess it. Well, not us, maybe the next committee will assess how it works after a few years. But I think that's what our intention is. No one is suggesting that this is nirvana. This is the ultimate answer. But at least what it does, it puts a compromise on the table that we can get people talking to each other. Until now, they can talk to each other. At all. I mean, you guys moan that you don't get certain things. And we get two departments that don't talk to each other. Because they are on a completely different conflicting routes. At least we've got these two departments at a stage where not only are they talking, not only are the ministers sold on this idea to try and make this thing work. I mean, everything is there, and you know, that is how we look at this, as a compromise that hopefully can create some certainty and so on. And then down the line, one can assess whether these things are working or not working and so on. So I think people must bear that in mind. This is not a perfect solution. Is at the moment the only solution that is workable and practical. So please, that is our message from the committee. And I think it's across party lines. We know this thing hasn't, for 20 years, people haven't been able to sort it out. Okay. Thank you, Ms. Fury. Is there more? Another one? Law Society? Someone from the Law Society? What's your name? Lydia. Just look quickly, let's start the next one. Okay, can we quickly have a 5-minute adjournment? If the Law Society is here, if they're not here, well, we'll just have to relegate them to the back of the queue. 5 minutes, tea break, and then we'll start. I've finished that submission, so we'll start with the next one. Okay? The next bill.
Good day again to everybody. I won't go through the title, the content, but I'll try and go through all of the topics quite quickly so that we can deal with it. I think just as a starting point, once again, our members do believe that the Air Quality Act is important for sustainable development, and we really appreciate the progress made to the state by the department to inform the amendment process, to align the quality management with the spatial tools, etc. The work taking place is really exciting for us. The challenge again, once again, is the implementation process that does not take into account international documented scientific sound published information, and I think in the case of air quality, also locally published policies and air quality standards, such as the Section 21 standard, which already prescribes standards and procedures. So I think we need to implement these in line with the standards more efficiently. And once again, some of the challenges, it's in many cases implemented by the different spheres of government. So I think that's something that requires some attention. The great opportunity we have now in this process is improvement in terms of integrated approaches to be adopted and the support of the advisory forum that has been included for establishment. So in terms of the Air Quality Advisory Committee, I think we really appreciate this because the initial intention was that we thought it would be established under the National Environment Advisory Forum LEAF, which never took place, so this is great. Once again, we think the key element that the forum should emphasize on is the principles of cooperative governance to align the different spheres. And I think improved understanding of mandates and roles and responsibilities needs to be emphasized. And I think this forum could provide some leadership in that context. Third is the time frame on the submission of the Boundary Area Air Quality Management Plan to the Minister for approval. We agree with the department that the time frame is quite short, and I think the extended time frame is really welcome. Then there's the amendment to provide for the consequence of unlawful commencement of listed activities. In terms of, it's quite a full slide, but in terms of amendments to provide the consequence of unlawful commencement of listed activities, the amendments has included quite a bit of comprehensive requirements such as need and desirability of the unlawful activity, impacts of the activity, mitigation measures, public officers, administrative fine, etc. I think these are typical issues that need to be included, rightfully so. However, I think there might be different scenarios for unlawful commencement of listed activities. So one could be just an illegal activity from the onset. I think on the other end, it could be just a non-compliance with a particular condition. Now, the way we have read this, and we may be wrong, is that where even there's a small transgression where just, for example, the standard might have gone up. We've exceeded the standard and it's an illegal operation, but just a non-compliance with a particular condition. Then the way the amendment is written, we'll need to compile a report, a comprehensive report regarding need and desirability, impacts of the activity, mitigation measures, etc., etc. And I think that might be a bit of a too comprehensive approach for that scenario. So I think there should be some leeway given along for that type of issues. Then the other bit is around procedures for the administrative fines. It is possible that a single activity which is in non-compliance could be non-compliant both in terms of the NEMA listed activity and the air quality standard. Now, the question then really we have is would there be two penalties, one under NEMA, 24G, and one under air quality?
Okay, so the
security we require. feel.
I hope they doesn't take the tails out of your
mouth. It's good to
have. Then go on to the
okay, so I think perhaps this just to be reviewed, because there might be under air quality a few non-compliance activities and under NEMA a few non-compliance activities and consequential. So should there be two fines? I think P4G and okay. Then we have monitoring evaluation report on the implementation of pollution prevention plan. I see this has been included in the amendment. We just want to know, we'd like the clarity, is this a different plan to the one, because normally when we do submit our environmental management plans, which include pollution prevention plans, there are conditions which are included which deals with reporting to the authorities. So is this the same plan, or would this be another one? I think because unlike you know, I think it might be a duplication. It's a monitoring, evaluation, and reporting on the implementation of the pollution. No, I've got the slide here. Okay, so I think here we just need clarification whether it's you know, the normal reporting in line conditions, or it could be a second report. Okay. Then the Ministry of the Licensing Authority in the various instances identified, here what I think we appreciate the department's approach to an integrated environmental authorization procedure as contemplated in the amendment, as it resulted in issuance of an EI authorization, atmospheric emission license, and waste license all at the same time under specific conditions. Circumstances. From the reading of the amendments, our understanding is that the minister becomes a licensing authority and not the province if the matter is delegated by local authorities to the provincial authority. So, you know, perhaps we just need to check if that is correct or not. This is how we read it. And then I think here again the issues around waste, for instance, if there's hazardous waste, the hazardous waste license is issued by the national government. If it's general waste, it's issued by the provincial government. So would there be two applications or would there be one? I think also in the case of cement production, for instance, we might have two different kilns at a particular site. The one will deal with general waste and the other with hazardous waste. Would we have to apply to two different authorities for the kiln, or can we have a site application at the highest level of authority for both the kilns? I think that's a question that has come up from our members. Okay. Then the cross-reference to the Environmental Conservation Act. Again, I think we believe that the entire facility has been managed by a single licensing authority to avoid unnecessary administrative burden, duplicate licensees and disparate operational requirements. I think this might be a bit difficult because the air quality permits are issued by the local authorities, but somehow I think this integration is quite important for us, because increasingly we're getting same information being asked in different contexts for licenses, waste license, air emission permits, and the EIAs. Then to clarify that applications must be brought to the attention of interest in affected parties soon after the submission of to the licensing authority to provide for a validity period of provisional atmospheric emission licenses. Now, I think The amendment reads as a provisional atmospheric emission license is valid for a period of 1 year from the date of the commission of the listed activity. I think there's two issues here. The one is 1 year might be too short because by the time we establish the infrastructure, 6 months might be gone already. And therefore, we only have 6 months to test. And that's too little time to provide some insight into air quality emissions. And that's the one issue. And therefore, I think perhaps the date, the time frame should be application specific or sector specific. And then secondly, I think there needs to be inclusion of the definition commissioning. What do we mean by commissioning? Is it when we start the infrastructure or once production has started at the levels that was applied for? Does commission start there? Because it's at the end stage and 1 year is sufficient. However, if the starting point is much sooner, then 1 year won't be sufficient. So these are some of the implementation challenges, I think, which needs to be translated to certainty in law. Then we have offences for non-compliance with control fuel standards. I think this has come up, we understand why it has been included. However, nowhere the air quality is a reference to control fuels, and maybe some of control fuels need to be brought under the ambit of air quality if that is the intention. And then in general, I think there was just some editorial center there. The amendment read like that the person has in section 49. We think it should have to be read as that person has, that person is instead of has. So that was the final comment we had. And then in conclusion, I think the work once again is commendable. We believe the advisory committee should be set up urgently and one of the key functions should be to harmonize the different environmental regulatory requirements such as the EIS, waste permits, and the air quality emission licenses. Thank you.
Any questions? Any, obviously, the difficult issues on one goal to another, but these are very technical. What I want you to do is that someone talks to Mr. Raja. There's a lot of things where he says, well, we're not certain we can do it, and so on and so on. Get those clarities, and then obviously there's an amendment that should make it. We did not explain and we disagree with it. But if there are, so please, I just had a chat with him. There's a whole lot of stuff that we may be able to set up through one chat. Any questions, Tommy? No? Okay. Thank you, Doctor. We'll look at all those, and I'll give you a call.
Well, we like to think of them as improvements.
It's understood that this is a consequential amendment to NEMA, and that the amendment making the National Air Quality Advisory Committee discretionary, we would like to suggest that this shouldn't say may, it should actually say must. So Bruce's position remains that this committee should be established. It shouldn't be voluntary, it should actually be discretionary. Thank you, Chair. Okay. Aligned with NEMA is welcome. The proposed amendment is not actually aligned to the NEMA amendment currently under consideration. In actual fact, the one fine is $5 million and the other $1 million, and we really do need alignment on that. Unfortunately, I think alignment would require a $5 million fine. Okay. All right, Chair. The attempt to integrate licensing is welcomed, but we feel that it should be aligned with 24K of NEMA 107-1998. And here the approach seems to focus largely on state-owned projects. We would like to request that consideration of applicants is able to apply for the minister to be the competent authority in this debate. Then amendment of section 38. Yes, particularly as things are becoming more and more complex, it would make sense if the whole licensing issue is integrated. They could have that choice. Okay, then amendment of section 38, as it's currently worded, it could be interpreted to be applicable to all applications, including renewals and amendments. Bruce would like to propose that there be some clarification, and if the intention is only to cover applications which would trigger an environmental impact assessment. Thank you. And then the validity of provisional licenses, section 41. Yeah, the inclusion of a time frame is welcomed, but it's been given a single year validity, and our experience has shown that finalisation can take a lot longer than 1 year. So we have a number of options. We'd either like to request that it be extended to 2 years, or that there would be a provision for request by the applicant for a longer period of validity within that 1 year. Or alternatively, you could possibly look at making it of indefinite validity with the proviso that applicant has to apply within their first year for an air emissions license. It's just that, Honourable Chair, in our experience, 1 year is often insufficient. It's local.
It can take
more than a year. No, from the government side.
Right,
from both. Apologies, Chair, I'm being corrected on my left, not from Dr. Lotta.
No,
usually
from both.
Yeah, from both.
But I can imagine there are some municipalities that are
Mm-hmm.
not a single one of them knows anything about yoga. That's the kind of logic. So I can imagine what happens. And then, of course, you get all the sharks in business, Mr. Jagadra and Raja, all the sharks in business, and Musa, who also try and use these weaknesses. So let's get certainty around this period. Look at those suggestions and then come back with one. Amen.
Thank you. Okay, in conclusion, the simultaneous publication for comment and public hearings limit our potential direction with the department.
This kind of thing, where local government does such a great job, we're now creating a clause in the Act, the same as we've done in Lima, to allow the applicant to then approach the minister to take over the power.
That would be fantastic.
So, just by the way, not there now, we may instruct it when we start the briefing, they must do the same as they've done in to allow for intervention that will determine whether things are not getting done.
It's a failure.
Okay, so when they link it to that, their response may be slightly different within the other mechanism of intervention. Mm-hmm. Right.
Thank you, we welcome that. Okay, on this point, just that if you publish the letter statement for comment and for public hearings, it limits our potential interaction with the department, and we do like to interact with the department. We're sort of committed to working with the committee and to develop amendments that achieve the stated objectives of this Act. Thank you very much.
I think your first comment is very valid. Just bear in mind, the problem is the end of the parliamentary hearing. So for them to get the bill here and for us to process it through 2 houses, plus public hearings in 2 houses, before March next year, so it's just impossible to run 2 parallel processes. So what we've committed to is to run 2 parallel processes. Whatever comments are made to the department directly, those comments then are brought to our attention when we process the bill after these hearings. Then all those comments must also be integrated into the 32. If you make comments there, not here, then that will be integrated.
Okay.
But your point, we said, to your point, that it's better to run.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Question? Seems a lot of proposals there. The department will look at them, those that I've not already agreed with. Come up along. Thank you. Wonderful. Thank you very much.
It's not a question, but I should think she will capture me where she is.
Yeah.
The presentation, I should think it's relevant. And,
the what?
It's relevant and it gives more.
That's what you said.
I'm saying it's relevant to the bill itself.
Okay. Okay.
Now, Chair, it seems this word of competent authority by the minister, it came almost time and again. Now, I should think, Chair, you need to assist all these presenters by saying the minister will be an appeal authority. That's number one. Number two, they must consider the activity, where the activity takes place. Takes place in the mining. But it doesn't mean this bill takes a responsibility of the environmental affairs. So I think we need to clarify that so that everyone can...
Air quality.
Yes, even that air quality. Yes, yes.
Okay.
Okay.
All right,
we'll
take the comment we've got. Okay, members, now I ask to switch off the light on air quality and now to move to the third bill, protected area. Okay? So switch your light on. We have the Center for Environmental Rights here. Let me just find your... Is everyone got a copy?
the PowerPoint presentation from the Center for Environmental Rights on the protected areas of the circle.
Honourable members, thank you very much for this opportunity to make a submission in the protected areas bill. I am Mastan Piat. I'm an attorney at the Centre for Environmental Rights, which is a non-profit law clinic with its main aim the realisation of all South Africans of the enshrined, constitutionally enshrined rights in environment that is not harmful to health and well-being, and to have the environment protected for the benefit of future and present generations by legislative and other measures that inter alia promotes conservation. Now, interested in making this presentation on the basis of our experience in applying the Protected Areas Act, or NEMPA, on our own behalf and on the behalf of other civil society organizations, especially in relation to mining. As a general comment, we welcome the incorporation of Marine Protected Areas, or MPAs, into NEMPA. We feel that it addresses the legislative fragmentation that is currently plaguing the South African environmental sector, as most protected areas now housed in NEMPA. It addresses institutional fragmentation. The Department of Environmental Affairs is now the responsible authority for managing protected areas, and we feel that they are better placed than the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fishing. It furthermore solidifies the protected area status of MPAs, and the management of MPAs will be better regulated. As you may well be aware, the NEMPA makes provision for management authorities and for management agreements in respect of protected areas. However, neither NEMPA nor NEMPA as amended by this bill explicitly and legally prohibits petroleum exploration and petroleum production operations in MPAs. So what are the implications of this? Exploration operations, by which I mean exploration for petroleum resources in the seabed, often require seismic surveying, which produces the largest man-made sound in the ocean. Now, seismic surveying kills relatively immobile marine biodiversity, such as your crustaceans, your lobsters, and other inhabitants of the seafloor. It causes behavioral change in some species. Whales, for example, have been documented to deviate from their preferred migratory routes to avoid this noise, and of course decreases your total available catch and therefore impacts on the fishing industry. Petroleum productions have an even bigger impact on the marine ecosystem. It's associated with petroleum waste dumping, production pollution and spills. This committee may well be aware of the devastation that has been caused by petroleum production in the Niger Delta in Nigeria, where petroleum production has caused the destruction of vast areas of sensitive and important ecosystems, and furthermore significantly and adversely affected livelihoods of people living there. The once fertile banks of the Delta are now completely sterile, and as you can see from this picture, it's been transformed into an industrial landscape. Needless to say, the inhabitants of the Delta are abjectly poor and suffer from ill health. Perhaps.
What is your argument that the exploration and production operations are not endorsed, not clear in the bill whether they are allowed in a protected area?
Yes, that is my point.
Perhaps a more prominent example of the potential environmental impact of offshore petroleum production operations, BP's Deep Horizon oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, which resulted in the death of millions of marine animals and the payment of billions of dollars of worth of cleanup costs and damages. Some believe that the Gulf of Mexico ecosystem will never really fully recover. So why are we concerned that this will happen in South Africa? As you can see from these statistics, there's an increased interest in offshore petroleum production in the South African coast. Most concerningly, one exploration operation right has been granted in respect of an area in very close proximity, very close to the Wurp Marine Protected Area. So what does NEPA do to allay these fears? We think not enough. Section 48 of NEPA provides for a prohibition against commercial prospecting and mining activities in marine protected areas. It does not prohibit petroleum exploration and petroleum production operations in MPAs and other protected areas. This is clear from Section 1 of the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act, in which which deals with the two streams of, let's call it, extractive activities when relating to prospecting and mining for minerals, and then the exploration for and production of petroleum, on the other hand.
The previous section you've got there, Section 48 of NEPA.
Yes.
Is that something that exists, or would that be amended now?
That's something that exists. We are proposing that this section is amended in the bill.
Well, it says, despite other legislation, no person may conduct commercial prospecting and mining activities
That doesn't cover me. The Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act makes a distinction between mining and prospecting for minerals on the one hand, and the exploration for and production of petroleum resources on the other hand. These are two completely separate streams of extractive activities, as defined in the MPRDA.
This commercial prospecting and mining activity, that doesn't come in?
We think not, no.
So what would you want that to mean?
Let me skip. Well, we would like exploration and production, I've left out the word operations there, and related activities. So we would like it to read, despite other legislation, no person may conduct prospecting, mining, exploration and production operations and related activities in protected areas. We turn now to Clause 12. This is the proposed insertion of Section 48A into the Principal Act. Section 48A2, read with Section 48A1, provides that the Minister may allow a person to dredge or remove sand or gravel from MPAs. But this activity, if one has regard to the definition of mining and mineral in the MPRDA, constitutes mining. And this is conceivably a form of non-commercial mining as contemplated in Section 48. Now, we reiterate that we propose a broader prohibition against mining, all forms of mining, be it commercial or not, in protected areas and MPAs, and that it's necessary to protect the ecological integrity of protected areas. I would like to see the restricted activity in clause the proposed section 48A1, which is a list of restricted activities. One of the activities is dredge or extract sand or gravel, which the minister may allow in certain zones in MPAs, despite it being restricted.
Despite it being protected areas.
Yes.
These are the exceptions, and you
Yes. We would like a broader prohibition against all forms of mining in protected areas, not just commercial mining. We're furthermore concerned that...
Chair, I think we need to just discuss this a bit further before we commit ourselves to some of these things. As long as we're clear on this.
And I need to know how far we engage with it, because, I mean, what they're trying to say to you is a protected area,
Yeah.
Or is a protected area, but depending on where we go to protection. And it does seem to me be a valid point.
Yes.
I think we need to have clarity what your intentions are. Against this, because we're waiting.
Well, it's to protect the protected area, essentially. So I think in principle we're in agreement, but obviously we have to... Yes, exactly. Yes.
Yeah, I think, okay, that's how I've understood the part. I can't answer the question. The intention is even protected area. Now, what is different from a sensitive area and a protected area? Sensitive area is used in mining. What is the difference? The same thing?
Well, Chair, a sensitive area may not be protected in any other way. It does, maybe it may not fall within a protected area, but it is within the general landscape, but it's ecologically sensitive.
So protected would be protected against mining, and then you've got a further thing called a sensitive.
Yes, ecologically sensitive. Yeah. And on your other question, Chair, we must just be sure that.
Mubwe may not be a protected area, but it may be a sensitive.
Correct.
Sensitive.
Yeah. Well, or a wetland in a wetland which is in a very urban area could be sensitive. But on your other question, Chair, we must just be sure that the law doesn't restrict the ability for the management authority to do ecological management. So due to siltation in the rivers and that, there may be dredging required to open estuaries, for an example, to ensure the breeding of fish and so on. So you must just be sure that despite the intention, you don't... Yeah. No, yeah.
I think in any case, if that is what you do and it allows anything, just to say it's an act. To say it accept any environmental management, it's a lot easier. Whatever you say, that management is a lot different management. So I think that can be done easily by saying this does not prohibit the law of people management, which means prescribed by the environment. So I mean, again, that ecological management would be done in terms of
Protected Areas Act provides for each protected area to have management plans. Yeah, we don't believe that anything sinister is meant by this provision or this broad ministerial discretion, but we just feel that it might create an expectation on the part of oil and gas companies that the minister can and will allow these activities to take place in protected areas. We propose that if our proposed amendment of Section 48 is not followed, then we propose that the list of restrict activities in Section 48A1 is split into restrict activities, which will be subject to ministerial discretion, and prohibited activities, activities which are completely prohibited. And we would further submit exploration operations and production operations are added in this list of prohibited activities.
Well, I don't understand understand the full of it because we can get the logical management. We may not have that differential. We have the words that we can exploration. Okay?
So in conclusion, I just bring to this committee's attention the purposes of declaring marine protected areas. This is now contained in the proposed Section 22A of NMPA, and they are to protect marine and coastal ecosystems, to protect marine and coastal biodiversity, to protect a particular marine and coastal species or specific population in its habitat near the areas contained scenic areas, or to protect cultural heritage, facilitate marine and coastal species management by protecting migratory routes, breeding, nursery and feeding areas, thus allowing species recovery, and to enhancing species abundance in adjacent areas, or to restrict or prohibit activities which may have an adverse effect on the environment. Allowing a window for offshore petroleum exploration production operations to occur in MPAs by technical oversight or not, we may well lead to the frustration of these purposes and ultimately in the destruction of these important and sensitive marine ecosystems and marine areas that are essential for the replenishment of fish stocks. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Any comments, questions?
Guidance from in terms of the methodology
should the session be going forward. The next slide, in terms of Section 36, probably the one where we have most concern, and that is with regards to the strategic infrastructure projects. And here we have a concern in that it poses considerable challenges and raises concern for the province as well as the district municipalities on how the state-owned entities or major hazardous installations in terms of their future compliance monitoring will be regulated. What this section essentially says is that DEAR will become the licensing authority. And so currently, province is the licensing authority for acoustic emissions licenses to the municipalities, whereas the district municipalities are for all industries. And so therefore we regard these facilities as significant point source contributors of pollution to the environment. And also what we have found is that the atmospheric emission licensing authorities are often accused by the public of pursuing political, strategic or social goals in a way that ignores the consequential human rights impacts, in other words, the right to clean air. And also say that the licensing authorities should not really have direct links to business enterprises that are owned or controlled by the state to ensure that the interests of local communities and the environment are protected. So basically in terms of these facilities,
Peristatals in it now. I mean, this clause doesn't list peristatals at all. It says the provincial organ of state. More than one province, or where cabinet is the chair of the national authority,
yeah.
Or the activity relates to activities listed in section 27. So it doesn't talk about the institution. So you now talk about the institution. I'm trying to work out why you're saying that.
In terms of the country, we do, for example, Eden District Municipality, they have a licensing authority for Petro SA, and the city of Cape Town is for Chevron, although Chevron is a state-owned enterprise, but also Transnet in Saldanha Bay, the West Coast District Municipality, is the licensing authority for the atmospheric emission licenses. So
they're not included yet directly as an organ.
Correct.
They're only included if they fall under C or D.
That's right, yes.
So, you know, that's your big infrastructure stuff.
Yeah, no.
You know, there's the IPCC, the Infrastructure Presidential Coordinating Committee. They're looking at big projects. Like if they say we're going to create Atlantis as a zone where we want to do stuff. So to build infrastructure, they try and plan it nationally and do everything at that level. You know, the roads, the water, everything. Water is a good example. In the, so that is where the cabinet declares it as a national priority, that infrastructure. So anywhere it's not declared a national priority, it will remain the same. If Transnet applies to municipality for something which they usually apply there, they'll be doing it.
Okay. So it doesn't apply,
as I read it here, it doesn't apply to specific organs. And the only one organ is where the provincial organ itself applies. Then it has to apply to national, or where there are two provinces involved. And then the other one is where there's a national priority. Now, the national priority, and I think here, if I understand it, did you spell out that whole procedure that we did in NEMA for a national priority before it's declared a national priority and it's been published in the Government Gazette? And so before Cabinet can declare, say, a big project as a national project, a national priority, they have to put it in the Government Gazette, and if you guys find problems with it, you'll be able to comment and so on before Cabinet makes the decision. So is this with the national ones where they're trying to amalgamate? Where the others are, we'll just go the usual way.
Okay.
The usual.
Thank you. Thanks for the clarification. I think that helps us a lot because we certainly thought that these state-owned enterprises would be included in there. However, we still do have the same concern, especially when it comes to monitoring the compliance and handling the complaints that will come out of those strategic infrastructure projects. In the past, with APA, the National DEAR was a licensing authority for all APA certificates. And with NEMAQA, that function was transferred to the district municipalities as well as to the provincial municipality, the provincial government. And so, and the reason, the rationale for that at the time was that the
basically the provinces and the district municipalities handle complaints and also monitor the compliance and the enforcement with any of those atmospheric emission licenses issued. So the recommendation for us is that the concern, as I've outlined, but then the recommendation for us is that the province and the district and the metro remain the licensing authorities for those, and that National Geo provide inputs to the process, and that the minister not be the licensing authority in IEDEA. And the reason
you
for that...
You undermine the whole object of a national project. If you're declaring national projects and you're trying to guide it from national, then if you say that other people on the way can then make the decision, that undermines the whole intention of big national projects. We're only talking about big national projects.
Yeah.
We're not talking about...
I understand.
I mean, there's no idea you have to take over every provincial...
Right. I think maybe just in terms of that, then there needs to be some way in terms of how complaints and compliance and enforcement will be handled then. If National is the licensing authority and provinces and the DMs, will do they then monitor compliance and enforcement, or who is then the monitoring authority, the compliance and enforcement authority?
What do you, Alf, what do you guys see it as?
Well, Chair, in any event, if there's monitoring compliance that happens, it happens at both national and provincial levels in most instances. If, for example, it's more practical for us to have our provincial colleagues do a site inspection, that kind of thing, we do that. But if the minister...
So you provide it for the licensing, but you've not made any amendments to the monitoring, and so whatever applies now...
Well, the compliance and monitoring, if the license is issued, our compliance and enforcement guys would go out and ensure compliance with that license, as we do with all our other authorizations. And similarly, if the provinces issue an authorization, they do the compliance and enforcement. The difficulty we have at the local authority level currently is we don't have the capacity in terms of... So usually when we do those kind of enforcement actions, it's in conjunction with the province and the local authority concerned as well. And I don't know if you recall in terms of our... I don't know if we've presented or not, we've done
so. So it's whatever now the way a national license is done, the procedural is the same.
Exactly the same, Chair. But there's conditions attached that need to be complied with, so the compliance and enforcement will happen as it currently happens.
Chair, just to link, it's the EMI system that we created in EMA, the Environmental Management and Vector System. Which has got environmental management inspectors with certain requirements for training, certain requirements in terms of their qualifications, and then once declared EMIs, they have certain powers in terms of the Act. And those EMIs can be located at any level of government. So it's that cooperative governance system.
And they'll be responsible wherever they do the license.
Well, there are two.
There
are two things that have to be done, as the Western Cape has pointed out. There's the compliance monitoring function, which links up to the national system or the system which reports in the air quality information system of stations in terms of ambient air quality standards. And then there's the end of pipe or the stack at point source emissions monitoring process. So that normal system, which is implemented at provincial and local government level, reporting into the national statistics center, would remain. I think that where the question is if the national the licensing authority, when non-compliance is detected, who then does the enforcement?
That's correct. That's the question.
So the system for compliance monitoring is standard. The question is who then does enforcement? The EMIs do the enforcement.
National or provincial level? Sorry, Chair.
Well, as I said to you, Chair, I mean, there's...
it's simple. And let's make it complicated. We here are now creating a clause which says if there's a national project, the minister is going to be the national competent authority, and the minister will give whole idea being that nationally it's easy then to coordinate, not all the different levels. You do it at that level. Cabinet makes that decision on behalf of the country. So whatever the reasons are. Now, okay, so you made that decision, the ministers, the license authority, for the big project in the Waterberg or in Atlantis. Who then is going to be the EMI that does the enforcement?
It will be the national EMI chair. Currently, and I think, let me give a practical example. Our big new power station, that's one of the national priorities that we've agreed with provinces. There we do the compliance monitoring and the enforcement as well. And as I said, in a lot of instances, our compliance and enforcement has actually worked hand in hand with the sort of almost local, provincial and local authority EMIs.
If this happens, then that task of enforcing there will then also be national.
That's correct, Chair.
That's the answer. So it's a specific project. Once Cabinet has given you a chance to comment, they then decide this will be a national priority. From that moment onwards, everything will be done at the national level.
Thank you. And if I may, will that also then include the handling of complaints? Because compliance and enforcement is very, there's a framework for it, there's a process for it. However, with complaints, it sort of can come in on any given day at 2 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning. So just in terms of that, I think we would also require DS to give us some guidance
complaints
as to who's handling that.
Chair, and once again, it's a cooperative thing with us. If there's a complaint that we have in the Northwest, for example, the first thing our guys will do is call on the guys close to the scene, if there's a spillage, whatever the case is. They'll usually go out and assess the situation immediately. And if necessary, we'll come out here as well and do a joint inspection and then carry out whatever compliance or enforcement needs to be done in that particular instance.
So that means the complaint can go anywhere.
That's correct.
And then do you follow your usual protocols?
Yeah, and we have a national complaints hotline as well, where people send stuff as a matter of course. Yeah,
local government.
That's correct.
You either call them and vice versa.
That's correct, Chair. So we deal with those. Every complaint must be dealt with, irrespective of where the complaint actually. And in practice, it's always
practical
a cooperative.
Issue, really.
Yeah,
practical.
And it's usually a cooperative thing. We work very well with our enforcement and compliance counterparts.
Yes, Chair. I mean, just to add, you can't decide for a complainant where they complain. In fact, they phone you as well. They phone you as well.
I mean, I just send it quickly away. No enforcement power here. I've only got Chileka. Chileka is very small. What's she going to enforce?
But sometimes they phone Chileka as well when they can't get hold of you. So, Chair...
What do you do in the practical way?
It's just a practical arrangement. At the end of the day, the complaint needs to end up at the right place. But you can't decide for a member of the public who they want to phone. They phone their ward councillor, the chairperson of the portfolio committee, or whatever. Whoever
that. What worries me now about this clause, I don't see all that stuff we put in NEMA there, all the steps about sending a copy to the public and going to the government. Is it? Am I missing something?
No, it's in NEMA. It applies. This is just a consequential amendment alongside that in the Waste Act, in the Air Quality Act. You have to read it together.
How would people read it like?
You need to read this together with the NEMA, NEMLA 2 amendment.
I think you guys will do it better.
Yes.
Link the two. I mean, you're going to have to be an absolute seer of visions to be able to link these things together. Remember, we're trying to make it easily applicable to ordinary people, then to the government, and then so on. I think that if this is the process that we're talking about, the national thing that we created, where the national priorities are created, we've created a specific process then. And it makes it very simple then to say here, yeah, that the process in so-and-so of NEMA will apply to where?
5C. Page 4. 5C.
5C.
Yeah.
That's the principle applicable. That's not the process.
No, but it's made the notice referred to in section 24C2B of the NEMA as amended.
But that's in terms of which it is. It doesn't make the process applicable.
I think you guys must make it clearer. All you've done here, you've created an empowering tool. So I think we must make it clear. Because here, what you're doing is, and we've discussed this, whether it's constitutional or not. We've agreed that we think it's constitutional, okay? That what you're doing is that the possibility is here that there's a competency that's now performed by province, which you're taking away for that area, just for the national, for that project. And the project changes, of course, it changes back again to the province. But for that project, so I think we must put it very clear what the process is, so that members can, and so anything that's not clear about it, I think we must, you know, I know when I practice law, when you have to start reading other laws to actually understand this law, it makes very easy. Let us rather make it easy. Whatever we want to make applicable to see, let's say, these sections are applicable, okay? Okay, next one, ma'am.
Thank you, Shian, that the discussion on that is really helpful to us as well. In terms of section 38, 39, 40, 41, 49, 51, 53, 62, 63, and then also to repeal Schedule 2 of Act 39 of 2004, and also the amendment of table contents of the Act 39 of 2004, and also the short tussle and the commencement, we do not have a problem with that. We do not have any objections. Then just the last comment that we have, and this comes from the district municipality as well as the city of Cape Town, very strongly regarding the complexities of the atmospheric emission licensing process. The Air Quality Act does not adequately provide for complex conditions that may arise during licensing process. For example, a brickmaking facility is renewing an existing license whilst at the same time applying a new license for new activities. In this instance, the facility will renew clamp kilns but will also apply for a new atmospheric emission license for vertical shaft brick kilns. And then, in terms of another example, a waste incinerator has an atmospheric emission license for one incinerator and a new provisional atmospheric emission license for new incinerators that must still be constructed as part of the EIA. And so the question really arises, next slide, whether the state premises can hold a provisional atmospheric emission license for one activity as well as an AEL renewal for another activity. The Air Quality Act, as it currently stands, does make provision for such instances, and so it is recommended that the Air Quality Act make provision for complex conditions.
I see nodding from the department, so it looks like you've struck a nerve. It has to be clear, at least, okay? So if it's not clear, then make it clear that now that we are harmonizing these things, there's no use that we leave things open, then you still have to apply two, three times. If you've got a whole process here to integrate your environmental licenses and so on, make sure that it's clear. And these examples that the Western Cape has raised, this is practically what they've encountered. So make sure that's covered, all right? Okay, happy with that?
Thank you, Chief. And we're done. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Much appreciated. I actually very much encourage governments to come, provincial government, local government, to come and give their input here. Because, you know, it shows us the flip side of the coin and what difficulties are there. So it's very, very useful to hear you give input. So a lot of those issues you raise, we will deal with it further and make it clearer what it is we want to do. Obviously, as far as the national issue is concerned, this is just something we're going to use, hopefully sparingly, in instances where there are big national projects, where there's a lot of infrastructure. Then you don't want, you know, I always use the example. I know the people at Backsburg Mine Farm, the Backs. And I remember when the Backs decided on their farm that they wanted to empower the workers. So what they were prepared to do is give them a piece of land where they could, the grapes that are farmed there would be theirs. They could then get greater. There will be a trust that the money goes to workers. They'll have a piece of land where they can build their own houses, etc., etc. I tell you, it is such a noble, noble plan. It took years and years and years because you have to go to national government for this permission. You have to go to provincial government for agriculture permission. Have to go to local government for this permission and never sell the twain meat in between. Yeah, it's a noble project. So I think this is what we're trying to do with these national kind of infrastructure projects, is get things at one place
so that national government can make intervention without intervening into the powers of others. So you create a process whereby you say, for this area, for this period of time, for this project, it will be done at the national level, exactly to try and ameliorate all those others. It's hugely problematic. So I think that's out in the PC. Hopefully used very sparingly. And as I said, like big projects like Waterberg now. They're now on a big infrastructure stuff there, and so on. So it'll be, otherwise, the framework will remain very much the same. The only thing that we've also looked at in mining for air quality that we have to change is the appeal procedure in mining. That should be done by the minister, because we don't want to get 860 municipalities involved in those appeal procedures. You can imagine everything we try to do in the mining agreement to get a package that everyone gets certainty that it will take this long. You'll go out the window if you add 860 other. So it's that kind of thing that we're just trying to harmonize and pull together without taking too much away from the provinces and local government. I already have said I think we should reopen the debate on air quality, but I'm not sure that the amount of powers that we've given local government at that level is working. It may work some places and some municipalities, but you can imagine when a huge part of your municipalities are basically collapsing, if they then have a major role to play in air quality, it's a recipe for disaster. Specifically enforced, but a disaster in even decisions. I mean, if you are struggling to do basic stuff in the municipality, why on earth will an air quality emission license be important? I mean, you can just imagine if you don't have staff to do other basic things, for them to have specialized people to deal with. And so we've got a big problem there. But at the moment, I mean, from our side, we've said we have to raise this to the debate. I mean, clearly we can't just take it away and deal with it. But at least we're now trying to find interventions. So if things do collapse, so the ones that do it well, you don't want to touch. Let them go on with it. But where the ones that are not working, at least there we want to create the power of that we've done in NEMA. Where there's failure to comply within certain time frames, then you allow the power to go elsewhere and be exercised. That the applicant can then appeal, like we did in NEMA, to the national minister, then the national minister, after a whole lot of steps have been taken, can then take over that function. It's exactly to try and keep what is good take place where it's good. So if the provincial government, the Western Cape does as well. But that doesn't mean the Eastern Cape government is going to do their work well. So, you know, where you want to create those kind of... So that we don't create a system of government that is so inflexible that if the one collapses, well, then the whole system collapses. There's no way that someone can intervene because the law doesn't allow. That is what we're trying to do with all the environmental issues now, is to try and create those balances. Keep as much as it is, but then also to create special powers elsewhere to try and make interventions where we are. So that's really the idea. Thank you. We welcome any further comments as the process unfolds. Thank you very much. Is that complete or the Western Cape? Finish? All right, so we're still waiting for university and? And who's the last? There's another input. Just the university. Huh? Oh, and Law Society. Law Society and Western University, Dr. Butterworth of the University. What time did you say that? Huh? No, they're 2:00, starting 2:00. All right. Okay, look, I mean, these people aren't here. Let us, I thought you said someone here from the university. Who? A colleague. Which colleague? Where's the university person? Jeremy? Is the Center of Environment finished? All of them? Tomorrow. All right, we'll be back at, what's the time now? All right, we'll be back at 2:00. Maybe we should do it 1:00. All right, 2 o'clock we'll start with the university. If they're not here, then they not will not take them anymore. And after that, we'll look at whether the law society is here. Otherwise, they'll also have lost their chance. I think bring your ICM notes afterwards, or we'll continue for an hour or two afterwards with the ICM, okay? All right, that is it. That's adjourned. Is it, are we back then? Okay. So you can leave your notes here, obviously.